Good evening, everyone. I call the Conference Committee on Senate File 5335 to order. Members, it's Thursday, May 16, 2024, and I'm glad to see all the conferees are here, and I think we will be proceeding immediately with the chair's agreement for a walkthrough done by the nonpartisan staff. Mr. Berg, and also we have Mr. Raymond. If you will get started going through the spreadsheet, and we'll hit the highlights, and so we can get to the other section. So please proceed.
All right, Mr. Chair and members, you should have in your packet a legal-sized spreadsheet that is labeled Senate Human Services, House Human Services, Finance, and in the lower right corner is dated 5/17/24 at 2:34 p.m. Very quickly, beginning on line 12, the bill spends its target of $42,130,000 in 24-25 and $14,860,000 in the tails. Jumping to page 2, we have in the priority admissions item that has been there for some time. Going to line 142, we have a engagement services pilot project in Otter Tail County that is sort of an outgrowth of that same item in the priority admissions. On line 146 is the governor's recommendation for an acute care transitions piece for people and with disabilities and complex health conditions.
Moving to page 3, the next provision included is in line 169, Senate proposal to put a reporting requirement for direct care and services acute care hospital study. Moving next to line 171, this largely funds, aligns with the House proposal for the 1115 waiver and the bridging benefits program. The next proposal included is on line 188, so this makes opioid allocation modifications.
And members, beginning on page 4, on line 192 is the elimination of the sunset on opioid manufacturer and distributor fees. On line 194 is the establishment of the Human Services Response Contingency Account. On line 202 is a 3% SUD provider rate increase for residential. On line 207 is a somewhat modified disproportionate share rate floor reduction item, setting the rate floor at $141 per day and sunsetting on January 1st, 2026. Moving down to line 217 is a no-cost item, the Direct Care and Treatment Separation Authority. On line 219 is the Direct Care and Treatment Advisory Council, which is a one-time item, and on line 224 are a series of technical cleanup items that net to zero in the spreadsheet.
Moving to page 5, line 231, this is a parental fee elimination for children in certain mental health settings, and this is funded at the House and the Senate level. Moving to line 235, this is provides funding for a plan for health-related social needs 1115 waiver. This is funded at the House level. Moving next to line 241, this is the Senate-only budget-neutral proposal that establishes a temporary exemption to new community residential setting licensing moratorium. Moving next to line 248, this is a modified proposal, a Senate proposal that rather than increasing access to data for vendors, instead has a report on simplifying electronic visit verification, and is funded at $102,000 in fiscal year 2025 one time. Moving next to line 254, this modifies Min Choices assessments. Moving next to line 256, this increases the transitional support reimbursement maximum allowance to $5,000. The Senate position had it at just over $4,100, so it's an increase compared to that. Moving next to line 260, this codifies consumer-directed community supports options provisions.
And moving on page 6 to line 268 is an item for customized living technical assistance. On line 272 is a behavioral health services payment for immigrant and refugee communities. On line 278 is a no-cost item that makes modifications to definitions in the long-term care workforce grants for new Americans from last year. And on line 286 is a no-cost item on authorizing assistive technology for lead agency partnerships. And on line 288 is the Community First Services and Supports Worker Reimbursement Report.
Moving to page 7, line 293, this funds a disability services person-centered engagement study and navigation study. This is funded at the House level. Moving next to line 299, this funds grants for electronic visit verification for home care service providers. This is funded at a reduced position from where the Senate was at and is funded at $1 million. Moving next to line 305, this establishes emergency relief grants for rural EIDBI providers. This is funded at the Senate level. Moving next to line 311, this is funding for own home service provider capacity building grants. And it's just over the House level. Moving next to line 317, this establishes a pediatric hospital to home transition pilot program and is funded at both the House and Senate level.
Members, on page 8 at the top, you have on line 324 an item on the was a House item, the peer recovery changes. On line 331 is funding for personal assistance services provided by parents and spouse. That was in both the House and Senate bills. On line 338 is a no-cost item on small assisted living facility food code requirement modifications. On 340 is a one-time item, which is part of the House position. It's now a homelessness report. And on line 356 is the Hennepin County Youth Peer Recovery Pilot Project, which was a House item.
Moving now to page 9, line 366. This is the House's targeted case management redesign proposal funded one time. Moving next to line 372, this is additional funding for caregiver respite services grant at about half the Senate proposal amount. Moving next to line 379, this provides a temporary property rate increase to certain nursing facilities. The Senate proposal was ongoing, and this would instead be for 2 years. Moving next to line 385, this is for Beltrami and Todd County debt forgiveness for certain cost of care payments funded at the Senate level. Moving to line 390, this is the nursing home loan program expansion. There's funding provided in both ongoing funding and the tails, starting at 462 in the first biennium and 822 in the fiscal year 26-27.
And members, beginning at the top of page 10 on line 396 is a modified Senate item for temporary free communications for patients and clients of certain direct care facilities. On line 400 is a technical item that is a cancellation and carry forward of the Direct Care Service Corps pilot project money that has a net zero cost. It's just creating a carry forward. On line 404 is funding for a health awareness hub pilot project and Chapter 245D compliance report. This is part of a Senate item. On line 409 is the funding for a caregiver support program for ALS-specific respite services. This was a Senate item, which is funded at about half of the Senate original amount. On line 413 is a capital improvement accessibility payment for adults with developmental diseases. This was a Senate position. On 417 is a linguistically and culturally specific training pilot project. This was also a Senate position. And on line 421 is an item that was in both bills, but is now about half of the cost in either bill, establishing a Dakota County Disability Services Workforce Shortage Pilot Project.
Mr. Chair, members, moving on to page 11, line 427, this provides funding for artists with disability support. This is funded at the Senate amount. Moving next to line 435, this is additional funding for self-advocacy grants for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and is funded at a reduced amount compared to the Senate's position. Moving next to line 440, this is actually a correction. This is now an ongoing rate adjustment for critical access nursing facilities. The Senate position was one time. However, that now ongoing funding is provided, $576,000 in the first biennium, and then just over $1.3 million in the tails. Moving next to line 452, this is funding for CWA for aging and disability services, and it's funded at half of the Senate amount.
And on the top of page 12, on line 462 is a technical item. This is a reinstatement of a housing stabilization statute that was inadvertently repealed. It has no cost but needs to be reinstated in statute. On line 469 is customized living portability item. That is 245 and 2425 and 466,000 in the tails. There are, now we come to a series of savings items, or at least the first of a series. 478 is a repeal of the community residential settings transition grants. It saves just under $7 million in this biennium. On line 485 is a license transition support for small disability waiver providers for $3.4 million. On line 492 is an item for shelter services to Churches United for Homelessness in Moorhead. That's a one-time item for $50,000.
Mr. Chair, members, moving to line or page 13, line 496. This is an administrative underspend at the Department of Human Services, which was included in both the House and Senate position. Moving next to line 501, this is a reduction for the traditional background studies that was funded in last year's bill. This starts in 26 and 27 and is just over $4 million in the, for the second biennium. Moving next to line 505, this is a reduction in the SILS grants. This is a historical underspend. The amounts start, the first biennium is $3 million reduction, and then the savings of $2 million starting in the second biennium. Moving next to line 509, this is the HCBS FMAP provider capacity grant cancellation. This is a savings of $2.5 million in fiscal year 2024. Moving next to line 513, this is the HCBS FMAP transitions to community grant cancellation in fiscal year 2024 only, and that is a savings of $300,000. Moving next to line 517, this is withdrawal management grant underspend, which was included in the Senate position. And moving next to line 521, this is additional funding for food security. There's three separate grants shown on line 523, 24, and 25. The American Indian Food Sovereignty grant is funded at $1 million in fiscal year 2025. The Food Shelf Program grant is funded at $2 million in fiscal year 2025. And then the Minnesota Food Bank grant is at $2 million in fiscal year 2025, all one time. Moving next to line 527, this expands the mobile crisis grant. And now moving to the Department of Health, the next proposal included is on line 581. This is a Senate proposal to establish a community care hub grant.
And members on line page 14, on line 586 is an item at the Health Department. This is an assisted living facilities staff training modification item. This is in the state government special revenue fund. It's $12,000 in 24-25 and $48,000 in the tails. On line 596 is an item related to customized living portability. This is also a state government special revenue item that has $521,000 in 24-25 in licensing revenue, which is then a fee revenue, which is allocated back to the department. On line 601 is a reduction in cannabis education grants at the Department of Health of 3.65 million per year beginning in 26. And I should note that this is the local health portion of the grants, not the tribal portion. And on line 697 is at the Council on Disability is the establishment of a legislative task force on guardianship. That's a one-time item that was in the Senate position. On line 707 is the Department of Corrections. This is their piece of the reentry waiver item that we talked about at the beginning of the sheet. This has a cost of 1.649 million in 24-25 and 4.3 in the tails.
Mr. Chair, members, moving to page 15 of line 718. This is funding for the design, development, and construction of the Cedar Riverside Recreation Center. This is funded one time at $5 million in fiscal year 2025. And the last two proposals I'll talk about together, first starting with line 730. This is a reduction in the general fund transfer to the Minnesota Forward Fund of $10 million. And then on line, going back up to line 722, this just shows the appropriation reduction to that fund. And with that, that concludes our remarks, and happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate the work that you've done. I think we don't appreciate much as this work continues in the final hours we're in right now. Members, do you have any question in regards to the spreadsheet? To the nonpartisan staff.
I have a question.
Senator Ebel.
Well, thanks. I'm, it's appreciated getting the draft of the bill that it printed at 414. I have it at the table here, so I didn't really have a chance to look at it very much. You know, just want to comment for all the collaboration this committee has had. That's not. So anyway, there's some items that appeared in the conference report that weren't in either bill that I find interesting. And they're mostly reductions. And so maybe if somebody can explain them to me would be helpful. And I don't intend to belabor it, but I just don't understand. So line 478, can somebody tell me what residential setting transition grants were that were $7 million away from? That's line.
Senator Edlund.
And how that, where that was heard besides the meeting of our two chairs? Line 478. I've got a number of questions like that, so if somebody can explain that to me.
I'll take a stab on that, and then I'll ask nonpartisan to explain it. Senator, I think last year we appropriated funds for those who are doing relocation, expecting that there'll be a large number of folks who will be transitioning. And so hence we looked at the ones who applied for transition, who are moving on, which we looked at that calculation, and we wanted to make sure that we have got a balanced budget before us. So we canceled that and then appropriated to the amount equal to those who are transitioning from assisted living to the CRS. And I will ask if nonpartisan wanted to add anything else.
Mr. Chair, Senator Abler, I'm not sure we have anything to add. This is, as Chairman Noor indicated, and I will say generally with a lot of these grant reductions, we have talked to the department and they have identified some grants that were in most cases underspent or underused, and this is one where, as Chairman Noor indicated, there is some money that's not being used here, and there's a different way in the bill that those providers are being taken care of.
Maybe the Senator department could come up and explain some of this, because I've got a number of similar questions. And I'm curious, were these one-time grants, like for the biennium, or the zeros that go forward? They're not changing. Is there money? One of my questions is there money going forward in these grants, or were they one?
Director Bailey.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Elise Bailey, Budget Director for the Department of Human Services. It's a mixture on this particular one on line 478. This was a one-time grant that was appropriated last year. And so as Chairman Noor mentioned, we're repealing it and then reappropriating it for a similar purpose, but a different amount.
Where's the line that you're reappropriating? Is there a new program or something?
Senator, I think it's the next line item after that. So let me pull that page.
Yeah.
481. The next line is 485. That is where we're reappropriating the funds to.
That's also, I'm just, you know, somebody could have talked to me and I wouldn't have to ask these questions. You know, but I just, so there's a, I mean, new programs aren't supposed to show up in conference. And so is that, is line 485 a new? Mr. Chair.
485, the same.
The one right after it. Yeah, the one that, is that related to that?
Senator Ebel, I think it's the same program because we calculated based on the number of providers who are transitioning. So we did not create a new program, but we appropriated based on the need for that so we can have a budget that will meet the needs of things that we have on this item.
I don't know, whatever. So I'm not trying to belabor this, and I know there's not much time, but I'm frustrated about some reductions that I'm aware of. So maybe, Mr. Chair, on line 501, somebody could explain to me what the traditional background studies reduction is. Were we paying for grants and now we're not, or what does that mean?
Senator Ebel, I will explain that also. This was the background studies for traditional that we were planning to use that fund last year, which we did at the final minute to make sure that we can pay for the background studies for those who are providing traditional PCA. But the number that we have here is not going to meet that need, and we don't have enough resources to do so. So I think the appropriate way is to reappropriate for things that we need to make sure we're balancing this budget.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. So does this mean there were studies we were paying for that we're not going to pay for anymore, or there's just not enough people that need us to pay for them?
Initially, Senator Ebel, we were planning to pay for those who are doing traditional PCA, so which means with this amount, we could not appropriate to all the traditional PCA. So in order to also balance this budget, because we don't have enough resources to add on to that traditional background studies, we unallocated it and reused it for this budget purposes.
So thank you. And so I'm just trying to understand this. So so we were paying for something. We couldn't pay for all of them, so now we're paying for none. Is that right?
That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. All right. And so who would this group, what agencies are not going to be getting $4 million that they were counting on?
This was last year and last minute to balance our budget we had put in for traditional PCA.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Director Bailey.
To kind of go into more detail about these funds, these were appropriated in fiscal year 26 and 27. So we had not yet begun to cover or provide grants to traditional PCA agencies yet because last year's bill appropriated it in the tails. So this is a grant program that had not yet been launched.
Yeah. Just it would be nice to have hearings on some of this stuff so people could say, what do you think of that? What should we buy instead? Mr. Chair, if I can just, there's a list of some of these that are all kind of new. So the SILS grants, I'm familiar with this topic, but how do we know what the historical underspend is going to be for the future? Line 505. And is there any impact, any living human that might have liked to get those grants?
Director Bailey.
Mr. Chair, members, no. We made sure with the amount that we're reducing, especially in the tails, that there will be no impact across the state. This is one program that we've had underspending for many, many years, and even when you were chair, we tried to deal with that by reducing the county. I think the county has a 15% share that they would have to pay when they utilize these funds. So we've tried to get at different ways to reduce the underspending, and we still continue to see $2 to $3 million fall to the bottom line. So we feel like, you know, $1 million a year as a base reduction will still leave enough certainty that folks that do rely on SILS can continue to receive those services.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair. Ms. Bailey, what's the base? It's fine.
Okay, sorry.
So if I can just ask another question, Mr. Chair. So 509, the HCBS provider capacity grant, what did that even do, and what are we not going to do with that money being spent?
Director Bailey.
Mr. Chair, members, so the, as you remember, the HCBS FMAP program was a programs that were appropriated in 2021 was a big initiative with the federal government where we had only 3 years to spend this money. And so we had many, many items. I think we had over 50 different projects. You remember that. So these are some of the items that that project has come to a close now. And there's a few items that now that, you know, that that project is coming to a close, some of the dollars will fall to the bottom line and will be canceled if we weren't to cancel them in this bill and reappropriate them. So you'll see a few of the items on here. On line 509 is a provider capacity grant. I believe we are appropriated about $24 million. And of that, about 2.5 is left of that appropriation. Last year, we had even more not related to the HCBS FMAP appropriated to that program because it is a successful program where we're trying to help providers expand their services across the state to rural or underserved areas. But this is just, you know, a portion of that year's appropriation that we couldn't get out the door. And then the next one is similar case where it's $300,000 that we believe will probably not be spent by June 30th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Bailey. Is there a reason that those weren't in the governor's budget as you were preparing your budget? So is there a reason?
Yes. Chair, Senator Abler, yes. We kind of waited until the FMAP plan is done now. It's the last quarter. And so it's only until now where we're kind of seeing where the chips are falling. So that's the reason when we put together the governor's budget, we weren't certain on the amount of money that would cancel.
Senator Abler.
And so I remember there was a deadline to spend that. The deadline's coming up, or we haven't passed it yet.
Derek Campbell.
Was March. Chair, Senator Abler, originally it was March 31st, 2024. Yeah, you remember.
I'm just enjoying the moment.
It's pretty good. But CMS has allowed states to extend that. So Minnesota actually will submit our last quarterly report this quarter, June 30th.
Mr. Senator Abler. So those have to be used for some approved kind of a thing. So this money in the bill is reallocated to something that they would find approvable for those monies. Because I'm sure there was some limitation.
Director. Mm-hmm.
Chair Senator Abler, yes. We had to spend, I think, around $680 million to fulfill our MOE, or maintenance of effort, with the federal government. We've done that because not only the initiatives that were passed in 21, but the rate increases that were passed last year far exceeded the amount that the state would have to pay towards HCBS services.
Senator Abler.
Well, thank you. And I see you're adding some money for food shelves, and that's randomly in the bill, but I'm sure nobody minds that. Is that distributed in some ordinary way that we already have programs for?
Yes, Senator, but I think if you can see the Native American food sovereignty, and then we have with the food shelf program, and we have with Minnesota Food Bank, which is on your spreadsheet.
Right, cool. Yeah. And then I heard something about this online, 601, the cannabis grant reductions in the sales. One question is, I don't know why we would do that, but second is that an ongoing expense that is that tail spending? Is that like in the deep tails that those are, that money, like if you reduce $7.3 million of that in the biennium, does that generate potential for future tail spending as well? Or is it a one-time?
Chair Senator Abler, this is an ongoing reduction of those grants.
Senator Abler.
Chair, I mean, those are actually pretty important to me. How much were other base grants, do you know?
Director Bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Abler, I'd have to get back to you.
Maybe the Department of Health knows.
I would say the rationale is really centered around there's a lot in this bill that is around assisting people who are experiencing substance use disorder. And so we are also appropriating money towards the residential SUD rate increases. And we have the 1115 waiver where we're increasing access to SUD. So I think a lot of the conversations were really around how do we utilize the finite resources that the state does have to gear towards, you know, increasing access to SUD.
Mr. Berg. you want to say?
Mr. Chair and Senator Abler, I believe this, there are several sets of education grants at the Health Department, and we are not touching the youth education grants or the breastfeeding grants, I think they are. This one, I believe, is $10 million a year. I actually have the sheet over in my file over there that says, but I'm pretty sure it's $10 million per year for these, for local public health and tribal. And as I mentioned, there's language in the bill to say that we, not to reduce the tribal portion of that.
Really?
Senator.
So this is going to the counties. Did you consult the Anoka County Public Health and say, do you mind not getting $300,000 for this? Or was this worked through at all with the people that are hoping, like with the SUD providers, with the people that are worried about the impact of cannabis, with the local public health people who were, had plans to spend this money?
Director Bell, did you want to state something else? Or I wanted to respond to that. I think when we were doing this, it's going to go back to the same population that it, they will be serving, particularly the 1115, wherever the counties really wanted that. Number two, I think the expectation is we, there's the ORAC funds and other funds which are doing the same purposes. We also have other funds within the substance use disorder that will meet the same needs. We want to make sure that we provide more prevention and helping those who are in need, rather than just the educational component of it. This came through the agreement with the OCM grant process, which has not yet been utilized.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope you're correct. One advantage of posting your stuff early is that people can kind of react to it, so I'd have a chance to ask them. This is actually the most local of local money going out to be used by many locals with an eyedropper to help go to their high schools and go to their community event centers and remind kids. And you've heard, you've not actually had the privilege of hearing my speech on the floor about cannabis, but I've never, think we've never done something that's almost assured to cause harm to a population group, particularly the youth, which I will call anybody under 25 because of the brain damage that can occur to the neurosynapses. But certainly people under age 21, and particularly middle schoolers, who think it's no big deal.
Need to go vote.
And so I don't know if this is a good idea to do. So, anyway.
Senators, I think they will be excused for a few minutes. And
Are we going to vote?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
I apologize. This will be the case for the whole day as we go through this process. It's that time of the year that we have to go vote. Members, we'll just take a brief recess while we wait for the senators to come back. We'll come back to order. Senator Edler, you were asking questions on this spreadsheet.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have more questions, but if somebody wants to take a minute and ask their questions, I'm willing to.
Appreciate that. I just wanted to take a minute, I think, on the food program. We have got some technical changes. We can get nonpartisan staff to explain that section, that will be great.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the changes will be, I'll start on spreadsheet, page 13. It's a proposal on line 521. This is additional funding for food security. So there's, as I understand it, there were some amounts that were booked initially that were included, and there was some new information that came up. The amounts would be adjusted. It's shifting between two grants, a total of $610,000. So it's the on line 524, that amount would be increasing by $610,000. I have that wrong. 524, that amount is going to be decreasing by $610,000, and then on line 525, that amount will be increasing, and also that corresponds in the appropriations article on page 167, the amount on line 167.30, that's the amount that's decreasing, and then on page 168, line 2, that's the amount that will be increasing.
Thank you so much. Any question, because this is just informational, we'll be bringing an oral amendment to correct the numbers.
a question.
Yes. No, do you want to do it now, or we should wait for once we do the bill? Yeah, I think we should wait.
We should do it now.
Unless...
do it now.
I think, since I think Senator Hoffman, did you want to move the...
I shall move.
We'll ask nonpartisan staff to explain the process. Mr. Mona.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Hoffman's amendment would be to, on page 167, line 30, delete 2 million and insert 1,390,000. And on page 168, line 2, delete 2 million and insert 2,610,000.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mohan. The oral amendment is on the DE. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The oral amendment to the DE is now adopted. To the spreadsheet as now amended.
Everybody's, I'm willing to wait if anybody has a question.
Senator Eber.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So, I don't know, I just had a nanosecond to check with a few public health people. And, Mr. Chair, just so you know, they're not excited about the changes on line 601 and following. And they actually had thoughts of what they might do with that money. So I'm just objecting to that as a revenue stream that makes any sense. So we'll talk about that later, I guess. But and so just going forward, I'm interested with the mix of departments here. Actually, I was just wondering if there are any public health people here to ask. And they don't usually come to this meeting because we do human services and there's hardly any touch on health. So they would not be prepared to talk about that. But so, and I wonder if there's anybody from the Department of Employment and Economic Development here. I see we're buying a rec center on line 718. That just kind of popped up. Can you, Mr. Chair, can somebody explain how that fits into a human services bill?
Thank you, Senator Ebel. As you understand, this is almost the end. Sometimes we try to find a lifeboat for some of the things that have been moving. This is to Minneapolis Park and Rec. That is the amount here. This is the funding that we captured from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. That's how we also funding the food program. That $10 million that we are getting is from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and hence this is kind of putting that project in one place so that we can have the two items.
So, Mr. Chair, so all this 722 down to 732 is all those numbers that I don't really comprehend generates $10 million from DEED?
Senator Black, the yes, Minnesota Forward Fund is appropriation that is within DEED. So we use that funding for the $10 million that we are directly appropriating for those two programs on this spreadsheet.
All right. So, I mean, I think that the rest of that MMB business, is that all the same $10 million?
Senator Ebel, that's correct.
All right. Was that part of the target of this committee to have some deed money in this, or how did that appear?
Senator Ebel, this is already fund that is available. So this capturing the funds from the accounts from deed was something that has been agreed to. And the usage is what you're seeing, the $5 million for the facility and the $5 million for the food program.
Yeah. Can I just ask, Mr. Chair, why you wouldn't have put that in the jobs bill with all the other deed stuff?
Senator Ebel, as you're aware of, the jobs bill is already closed, and they were just waiting to bring it to the floor.
All right. Well, I'm just happy it's deed money. It's just funny it's there. So those are my questions on the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fateh.
Yeah, I'd like to offer the aid. No, I'm joking. So on line 390, it's the nursing home loan program expansion. Some of my constituents heard that this program would be expanded to include HCBS agencies such as PCA. I just wanted to verify if that's correct or incorrect.
Senator Fata, this, we're creating a revolving loan program from the last year's funding that we allocated for the nursing home. This will ensure that there is enough resources because it was set to sunset by 2029. We're removing the sunset, creating a revolving loan, and also adding some funds into the tails. Yes, it's going to fund some of the assisted living program, group home program. It's a loan program that we're saying that the amount that is already going to remain in the account will be available to those entities.
So yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's Mr. Okay. Chair,
is that same
Senator. Line?
So there's other loans that are out that are going to get paid back. Is that going to go into this fund to be revolving as well, or are those just going to go back to the general fund?
Senator Ebler, any funds that we allocated from that $93 million, when they're being returned, as far as I know, will come back to that revolving loan, so it's going to stay with the department.
Mr. Chair, that's a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other question on the spreadsheet? I just wanted to say thank you again to Mr. Raymond and Mr. Burke for your help. In case of any questions, I'm sure you'll be with us until we're done with this process. We now move to the language before us. So we will ask nonpartisan staff, Ms. Benelli and Mr. Monahan, to walk us through the DE. Yep. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record. At the same time, I think we will be covering the policy-only provisions in the bill. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Liam Monahan, analyst with Senate Counsel.
And Mr. Chair, members, Danielle Pinelli from the House Research Department.
Mr. Chair, members, I will be pointing out the policy-only provisions contained in the first three articles, and then I will hand it over to Ms. Pinelli to do the remainder. So in Article 1, which is the Disability Services article, the Senate position to establish a temporary exception to the moratorium on licensing of new community residential settings was included. Compromise on the House-only provision related to requiring counties to engage in the competitive proposal process for contracted case management services was included, as I said, in a modified form. Also included was the Senate-only position modifying provisions related to MnChoice assessments. These ones were different provisions than those that were in the governor's bill. These were the provisions related to making permanent an existing temporary exception for certain assessments performed by contract assessors and extending the timelines for responding to a request for an assessment. Also included was a House-only provision related to modifying EIDBI provider qualifications. A Senate-only position modifying the consumer-directed community supports option, including by increasing disclosures to participants, limits on lead agencies' discretion with respect to CDCS policy, and a direction to the commissioner to clarify certain policies regarding CDCS. A new provision was included that prohibits providers from coercing waiver service recipients to change waiver plans. A House and Senate position that had some differences was included. It was a modified version of the governor's proposal related to a report to create a MA service to allow home care services and CFSS services to be provided in an acute care hospital setting. A Senate-only position related to modifying the definition of new Americans for the purposes of the new American Legal Social Service and Long-Term Care Workforce Grant Program was included. A Senate and a House position related to permitting lead agencies to establish assistive technology partnerships to facilitate timely authorization of allowable technology and assess the benefits of the use of technology among HCBS waiver recipients was included. That concludes Article 1 for the policy only provisions. Article 2, a mostly Senate only provision related to modifying the food code requirements for small assisted living facilities was included, and then the House and Senate positions related to modifying the orientation and training requirements for employees who move between facilities that are owned or operated by the same entity was included. Also in Article 2, a House-only position that expands the financially distressed nursing facility loan program to other long-term care services and supports. I suppose that was on the spreadsheet now that I've said it out loud. That's the end of the policy-only provisions in Article 2. Article 3 contains a House-only position that modifies provisions related to the role of the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities with respect to SUD services.
Mr. Monahan, I think we will pause a little bit, go to recess to allow the senators to go vote in the chamber. So, members and everyone, we are in brief recess.
On, actually, oh, it is on, okay. Lines 154.8, Section 1, it's Article 6, under the miscellaneous. Free communication services.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Monahan, if you wanted to just go through. Okay, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
Mr.
Chair, thank you. And to Representative Franzen, there was last year a bill that was passed that funded free communications for people that were in corrections facilities. Mm-hmm. And they overlooked people that are in DCT facilities. And so this was what we saw. Umar Verbatim brought that bill to us at markup time, and we all agreed that you shouldn't discriminate against people with disabilities because they should be making those phone calls. We should be covering that as well. So that's all that is.
Okay.
Yeah, Francis.
May I continue? Thank you, Senator Hoffman. When I read line 155.25, a facility means any facility, setting, or program owned, operated, or under the been a long night.
You're good.
Or a fiscal control of direct care and treatment. So does this include all treatments or all facilities in DCT? Would this also include people in MSOP?
Mr. Chair and to Representative Franzen, yes, those folks at MSOP are not in a criminal place, but they are in a treatment facility. So that would all fall under that same umbrella.
Representative Franzen.
Okay. So we would potentially, under this bill, be giving communication services to sex offenders?
Chair Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, they already have those communication ability. Remember, under DCT, that's why you see the cost in the tails, because uh-huh. they have to be monitored phone calls. It means folks listen in on those. Sure. They already have that ability to communicate. Uh-huh. This just is consistent with what we did last year for people that were in correctional facilities. And it's now people that are under DCT, which the majority are people with disabilities.
Uh-huh. Representative Franson.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about that provision, but okay, carry on.
Any further questions regarding the policy and the DE provisions for the nonpartisan staff or for any member sections? Hearing none, I think we will go to if there are any amendments to the DE.
I don't need to be greedy, Mr. Chair. I'll let somebody else go first. I'm sure Senator Fatte has a bunch that he wants to work on. And okay. Well, I'm happy to go. So I'd like to move the A-79.
Senator Evler moves the A-79.
Can staff you, has it. To pass
on. Can you please describe A-79?
I don't have a copy of that, Mr. Chair.
We are getting that is going around.
I'll wait for it to get passed out, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I already have it. Thank you. Thank you, David.
Senator Abel.
Well, thank you. We've discussed it at some length. This is about the disproportionate rate changes. And I want to give this committee one chance to avoid a terrible cliff and terrible harm to the individuals who are being served in some of these assisted livings. It is not without consequence. There's a study coming. What the governor proposed and the House adopted was to eliminate the program. And I thought the Senate came up, and Senator Hoffman, I thought he had a brilliant idea in talking with stakeholders that let's go from the 189 cap or 191 or whatever it was down to a much more sensible number that makes sense based upon people's needs. I think the department and persuaded me that made some sense. A few providers mentioned that they actually could live with that. It would be quite useful. But given the extra costs that they have, as they have these high percentages of guests, of clients in an elderly waiver and other waivers, that they needed a bump to make it work. Mr. Chair, both chairs, you're fully aware that nobody can live very well on Medicaid rates only. And the higher they get in their percentages, they're close to living only on Medicaid rates. If you have an assisted living like up what I have in Ramsey, where they take two people on assisted living and they all the rest market rate, who cares if we even pay them at all? But if that's your bread and butter and you've made your whole model about serving individuals, it's a big deal. And I talked to, well, whatever. I've been trying to be reassured, oh, it's going to be fine. And I don't think it's going to be fine. I don't think it's going to be fine at all. For one thing, there's not enough beds for people in elderly waiver and the other waivers to start with. And so what this is going to do is no one's going to open up a new one, a new cluster of some high capacity, high incidence elderly waivers. And I wasn't in the meetings, and you guys had your decisions you're making. You made all these decisions, and all the numbers were working out. And, you know, and I get that. But I just have to say again, you don't know the harm you're going to be causing. This is not a good idea. There are places that are going to – you're going to see people needing to relocate out of elderly waiver buildings into other places that don't exist, that don't exist. And so what I've done here is simply reinstate the Senate position. And I funded it. Representative Noor, I was impressed that you found some money to pay for your SUD rates in the tails by deciding that the department had plenty of money. And so I think this kind of blends them both together. I think the elderly waiver people that really need the money can be carried forward. I have a great confidence in your astute mathematics. And so at least at one point, Mr. Chair, you felt that there was sufficient money in the department budget to pay for this. And actually talking to individuals, in the bill there's a section that talks about the unexpired, the session law expires, but the money doesn't necessarily. And so I think there's more than adequate money in DHS to cover this. And if they need to improve upon that, the next year when they bring their budget, they can find a way to do it. But I think above all, we need to continue this program.
Thank you, Senator Ebel. I think we had an extensive discussion during the conference walkthrough process where we talked about the disproportionate share and how the impact of the 45% that we did last year, particularly for the elderly waiver. So I think there may have been some disagreement in what is right, what is wrong. So with this agreement that we have right now, it's going to extend up to a year, and this allows the folks who are receiving disproportionate share to continue with those rates. And then in 2026, January, that's when it sunsets. We're hoping that people will see how their, the income or the rates that they're receiving is up to par to what they're doing right now. In fact, it allows them, as people are transitioning with the service agreement, everyone will pick up the new rates, which we increased by 45%, Senator, last year.
And Senator Nora, excuse me, that was meant to be a compliment. Anyway, so Representative Noor, I respect your opinion. I do not agree with it. And I want to caution the members of this committee and the public who are listening that next year may be a different year for the target than this year has been. As small as this target is, when you have a negative budget, you beg for a dollar to spend. I've lived through that twice now, 2003 and 2011. It is not fun. 2003 was child's play compared to 2011. And so if we decide next year that we are going to want to continue this funding, because all indications are like, oh, we should do that, there would not be money. That money will be fighting against food shelves and against everything else to get a target to this committee to do it. And it's a couple million dollars. And I think to spend that money on whatever fine programs you bought otherwise is an error. And you will find yourself unable to rescue this industry. And I'll stop pretty quick. But this is, as we talk to the various providers of this service, this is actually one of the areas on Medicaid that actually works. They have stable staff. They have clean buildings. They're running at capacity because people want to live there because they take care of them. So I'm not going to ask for a roll call, though I'm tempted to, but I kind of predict how the vote's going to go. But I would ask you to reconsider. I think you're making a grave error. And this program came out of the need for these people to get their money, and they're not getting the 45%. I was just talking to one provider today. And so it's better to take the Senate position, which I commend Senator Hoffman for coming up with, and then wait and see. You've already found a bunch of easy ways to get some cuts and get some extra money to buy stuff. Let me tell you, when you find ways to find those same monies to reduce stuff, it's hard. But I don't want this group to be in peril because of that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ebler. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to piggyback off of Senator Ebler. Senator Ebler and I were part of the 2011-2012, and he was my chair, very good chair. And I know the stress that he was under having to cut programs, and it was very, very difficult for him. Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, out of this entire budget, why we would choose to, I understand that we're having to save money because of the oncoming fiscal cliff that we're running towards, but I'm wondering why out of all the ongoing programs, this program was chosen to be cut?
Representative
our most vulnerable people.
Representative Franson, I think if you recall last year, this provision was included as part of the governor's recommendation. Because of the increases that we added, Chair Hoffman and I were you know, made sure that the elderly waiver is funded significantly. We added 45% to that rate, that 119 that you're seeing right now on that page. We deleted it for the, basically in the elderly waiver, because we are now paying more than that. And so with that process, I think if we just stay within the disproportionate share, the elderly waiver program, they'll be earning less. With the new program now, they're up to par with the increases that we made to 45%. So I think they're two different rates, and I think for that reason, we waited until this year. We're not cutting the program. It's because if you read that section, which shows that if we fund 100%, we will discontinue the disproportionate share. So that's what we're doing here, to make sure that folks who have been impacted, they will pick up the new rate, and it should be able to get them at a higher rate under the elderly waiver.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Hall.
And to, as a follow-up to the representative from Wright County's question or comment, the looking at the three things, you got CADI and BI folks, right, and then we raised the elderly waiver rate 45%, went back, and our hearing, which you were part of, you heard the, we had long conversation about this, and the industry folks were saying, why move this to zero? Because you remember the House position and the governor's position was to just completely eliminate. And yes, the good senator from Anoka, it was our position at 140-41 with some ongoing tails. And the comment was, you haven't even looked at this for a year, right? And so the light bulb went off and it said, because you know, when you renew your service agreements, it's spotty, right? You know this. And so it was like, well, then let's give that a year to see how it works, come back, because the effective date is a year after that, and then have another conversation about, is this working, right? Because here's what I was hearing, and it's really hard to listen to somebody say, we are being encouraged to convert people on the BI and the CADI waiver program to EW. It wasn't, and so when that comment comes out, it's not about the individual, it's about the facility, and it's like, well, stop. And it was anecdotal, right? But if there was enough of those stories that said, all right, well, then let's do this full year, let's take a look to see really what the system is doing. I don't see this as a negative effect to the system, but rather an opportunity for us to elevate the money, have that disproportionate share in there so nobody's hurting from that, and then a year from now, we come back and say, is it working? Is it not working? To me, that has the data that's in there. And I don't want to hear any more horror stories of people that are being kicked out of programs because they have a disability. That's when I start to say, stop, right? And rather than going to zero, it was like, no, give us a year to look at this. That's what the industry people that I was talking to were saying. And so that's where I was thinking on that one, Representative Franzen, was this gives us time. This gives us time to really look at and keep the money in play that the Senate position had. The House accepted that conversation, and that's where we're at right now. Does that make sense?
Senator.
Yeah. Senator Champion, like at the end, then they go back to the author of the amendment. So I'm figuring this is the last word, so I just wanted to offer a comment.
Yes.
And I appreciate the discussion, and I respect the two of you very much. And I respect your passion and your hearts. But I think you're wrong. And this is what's going to happen. You're going to spend about $1.8 million out of the savings from the Senate position. But for going forward, in the tails, you're going to lose $8 million, or more than that. Yeah, $8 million, $9 million per biennium in the tails. That's going to go to something else. And so I'm not sure that's where you want to go. And Senator Hoffman, I would never want someone to be dislocated over this thing, but I think that, you know, an anecdote of a couple of people, maybe some behavior by some provider that's misbehaving, I'd like to chat with them, but I have to tell you that the majority of the providers are not doing that. I just talked to one today, and they don't do that. And so if there's a provider who's, we could put a caveat in there saying they may not do that. They may not convert people. That protects that from happening ever again. But for the ones who are doing good work, the ones who put their business on the line, the ones who choose to serve truly, They're not going to get that chance. And so, anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, we are. Mr. Chair, thank you. It's a year. We're going to look at this for a year. And you know what? In this case, you say I'm wrong. I think you're wrong on this. I think this is the right thing. This is the first time in 3 months I felt that this was the right thing to do based upon, from both sides, Jim, of people talking about it, it was like, well, which way do you go? Well, we're going to do this. And when you looked at it, and then if you think it's anecdotal, have a chat with Nicole from the Department of Human Services and find out just how anecdotal it is. It's not just anecdotal, Jim. It's happening. And they would be more than happy to share with you not just one or two stories, but a whole bunch of things. And it saddens me to see that there are some folks who are saying, well, let's just convert these people. That's not okay. So now let's do this. Because I'm hearing all the stories, let's get a year to look at this. We're not cutting anything. We're saying we're going to get a year to do this. We start looking at it next year because the thing doesn't end until 2026. That gives us more than a full year to look at this. That's where I felt finally like we'd collect some data on this, because the system, to your point, it's a great system. Assisted living is a great system. Absolutely it is. There's some great providers, and I've been to a lot of them all the time. And it's like this finally gives us some good approach to some good data that says what is working, what isn't working.
Mr. Chair, just briefly, and I'm not going to debate my friend at the table here. And I respect your passion and your concern. But I just want to remind people, the program is abolished at the end of this time. And to get it started up, you have to have every first dollar, and you have to pay for 4 years of that money next time when we do it to handle. It's going to be a $16 or so million item in a very tight budget. My cautionary note, to save $1.8 million right now, just to point that out. So I'm done. Thank you for the conversation. I urge members to vote yes. This is something you look back on and be happy about.
Hearing no further discussion, Senator Abel renews his motion A79. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
That's good.
Any other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Abel.
If anybody else has one, I'll let them go. I think Fate is working on one here, but maybe not. I'd like to move the A80 amendment.
Senator Ebler moves A80 amendment. We will get the A80 amendment to be distributed to the members. Senator Abel, if you can explain, you know, we're not used to this in the House. We usually get prior process, but please proceed.
Hey, we don't have a 24-second rule, Mr. Chair. It's actually helps us react to stuff. And so anyway, so I didn't think any of these are difficult to comprehend. And so if I thought you needed some preparation, I would have done that. But anyway, so this would restore part of the critical access nursing and some of the cannabis grants. And Mr. Chair and others, I think if you're looking at what I'm showing you here, these are been the priorities of the Senate on a bipartisan basis of things to worry about. You're not going to see a partisan flavor to any of this. This is all about good government, serving people who need it. And so, again, I suggest that the department relinquish its $4 million that it's holding for a rainy day and suggest that it is a rainy day for these two programs. And I want to thank the two of you and staff for coming up with some tail funding for the critical access. So this reinstates the original Senate number to start with and keeps your tails. So it builds on the strength of what you've worked on. And it reinstates a portion of the cannabis grants in 2025 with carry forward. And so rather than cut the $7.3 million, it's able to reinstate about $1.3 million. And my concern about the cannabis harm is not insincere, Mr. Chair. I have talked to too many parents about how their young person has become psychotic and worse and committed suicide. And at one point, some of these parents, the child, the young person is so far down the pipe that they were just tragically very, it was just hard to watch the person live. So I don't think it's appropriate when we have the needs that are out there, particularly the nursing homes, critical access nursing homes, and this cannabis thing, to award the department a grant to do with what they might think of. And I have no disrespect for the department, and I trust that they'll use the money very wisely. But I think if it's, you know, when your house is flooding, then you're like, well, I guess we're going to use the extra towels to kind of sop up, and we'll have to find some towels for the shower. I've never used that analogy before, Mr. Chair, and I may never use it again. But I just remember when I was a young person, and when I was a sixth grader, it was really raining really hard, and I was charged with sitting on this upstairs, and I was supposed to, it was leaking in the window and draining down. I had sat there and had to bail out the windowsill with towels. But anyway, the nursing homes are in a crisis. The critical access nursing homes are in a critical place. And this bill, your target was not large enough to do anything meaningful. But I think the Senate had a meaningful start. I think what you have would be productive. I think combining those is really good. And the cannabis grants, that should have been a hearing on that, Mr. Chair. There should have been a bill. There should have been testimony. We should have heard from the public health people how they just don't need to do with $7 million for that. But this will reinstate it, and I think I would urge members to vote for this. I think, again, looking at the priorities that we have, and I know the Senate would be happy with this on a bipartisan basis. And it makes the good things you've done in the bill a little better, and so I urge a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator Abel. I think if you look at what we have done in this bill for the critical access nursing facilities, we're putting 1.330 in the TALES, which is ongoing. And if you recall last year, we put $10 million, with a small portion of it being one time only. This will ensure that we've increased the ongoing funding for the critical access nursing facilities in the state, especially those who are in greater Minnesota, so that they can have a quick access if they need resources to help them. It's a great program. That's why we put more money in the ongoing for the critical access. And now going back to the educational fund, because the funds for the opioid or the cannabis bill, it was meant for more educational. And if you now go to the jails and see what's happening with individuals, if you have visited, so many young people are going through withdrawal process. They don't have access to the program that we're creating here, the reentry waiver program, giving them Medicaid for 90 days, working with community-based organizations, providing grant program to the prison and everyone to make sure that we can save lives. And this is more important, to make sure that those who are right now in jail, suffering because of the opioid crisis we have, this will further the dollar that we're investing in that program. It's a huge deal if we can put the program in those jails. For those with mental health, substance use disorder, you should visit those jails and see the struggles that are happening, whether they're young adults to folks who you never expected to be going through that process. So I think it's a critical piece to make sure that we fund those programs that are going to yield a greater result, rather than just the educational component about the substance use disorder. If you recall last year, we invested more than $200 million in the harm reduction area, and I'm hoping those resources will be utilized to do the same things, as we included also awareness in that program last year, if you recall on that spreadsheet.
Anybody else? I'm willing to yield to somebody else, and I'll just make my last thought if you want.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if Senator Wicklund or Representative Liebling was consulted, since Minnesota Department of Health is their jurisdiction.
Representative Franzen, we consulted with the chairs, we consulted with the department, we consulted with the administration. So this was agreed upon by all entities who are involved, all the stakeholders, knowing that this fund will be used for that purpose. Mm-hmm. Representative Franzen.
Mr. Chair, so Minnesota Department of Health signed off and gave the two thumbs up?
As far as I understand, yes. We had that conversation. The Minnesota Department of Health is aware, and they give us the authorization. This came from the administration perspective, knowing that we're going to be using it for the purposes of addressing the harm reduction. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, when you say the administration, are you talking about the executive administration?
Both the executive administration and the Department of Health.
Okay. I was under the impression the Minnesota Department of Health was not supportive of this provision.
Representative Hansen, I'm not aware of anyone who is not supportive. In fact, I haven't received a single email or any objection from the Department of Health.
Okay.
Any further discussion on this amendment, AA? So, Senator Eber.
And I appreciate that you haven't gotten any emails. The spreadsheet was posted at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, right, today?
Senator Eber, I think the conversations were happening behind the scenes to make sure that we find the fully funding the reentry waiver. As you are aware of, when we received, if you look at the spreadsheet, the Senate position did not provide the resources to address the reentry waiver. Hence, that's why we were able to have that provision in our bill.
Senator, no, I'm not objecting to the nice program you set up. I think it's. I think there's just a tremendous amount of nice things in this bill that are going to be very worthy going forward. But I'm suggesting to you, had this been posted a couple days ago, when the spreadsheet was pretty well squared away, that you might have had some people inquiring about that this particular element about what the impact on their local programs are going to be. And Mr. Chair, as a person who's concerned about what we have done, and I think we've opened Pandora's box on cannabis, I don't think the negative effects are fully yet seen, and they will be seen in the year and the decade to come, that your very point about the jails and people in treatment and so on really does say we need more prevention. And so I know how the vote's going to go, but I just have to be a person here who's sticking up for the people who don't get the voice. And I think if you would have posted this a couple days ago when it was kind of scored away, you would have got quite a bit of people writing you saying, what are you doing? And explain to my county board how we don't need this, and explain to my local public health the plan we had in place. We hired some people counting on these grants, knowing they'd be long-term employees. We had this grant set up. It's in the tails. Anyway, just telling you. So, and the nursing homes, we fully understand the challenges there. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe you want to vote yes on this. It's a really good amendment.
Thank you so much, Senator Ebler. Senator Ebler renews his motion to adopt 880. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted, so the motion does not prevail. Any further amendments?
Mr. Chair, I have only two.
Senator Ebler.
I'll move the A78.
Senator Ebler moves A78. We'll wait for that to be distributed to the members. Senator Ebler, if you can explain the A78 amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually the Senate position on governance at the new DCT. This is Senator Rasmussen's amendment, and I was hoping he could maybe be here to chat about it, and I don't plan to go very long on it, but I want to caution, and so this people who have read both bills would be aware of this, that it was accepted in the The Senate voted 53 to something, 13 or, yeah, 13. The 13 on the bill, as compared to your bill, which was more party line. And part of the reason it was so popular was the inclusion of ideas from the whole Senate. And I've talked to Senator Hoffman about this, and I don't think he's interested in doing this tonight, but I might caution us that we don't have a placeholder for a more functional board. We have a board that's going to be a very weak-run thing. You have an advisory board. You've got the board itself of a collage of individuals. I don't know if they're full-time, and they hire an executive director. And the question is going to recur, and you may hear this on the floor. I don't know if it's going to come up in debate or not. Who decides who stays and who comes from the various programs? The current program is the commissioner at the end of the day has to decide, does someone get out or not? There's a group of people that make a recommendation, and then they have to sign off. And I'm of the opinion that too many people are there in the first place, and I didn't think the program was constitutional. The Supreme Court decided it was, and I grieved at that because I think it's a lousy program for rehab and they're there too long. But that being said, part of what DCT getting spun off, maybe there can be some attention done to this in a very productive way. But right now, in the structure you've got, who's the decision maker? The executive director? Who wants that job? And where's the role of the governor in this? The governor appoints the board, but then they hire the executive director, like, oh, we're letting out this, you know, and invariably, do you remember the first one they let out? It was like, it was not like an axe murderer, but it was this person had like 50, like that's the guy that you wanted to pick to be the first person out? There are some people there that did something when you're in 16 and they're almost 30 and they're still there. It doesn't make any sense. And here they are. I don't know why they're still there. But and so a bunch should be out, but some should be in. And so what is the methodology going to be for who decides, who gets out, and who stays? And unfortunately, in 2011, as part of the bill with the 1.8635 reduction, I increased the county share from 10% to 25% if you send them to Moose Lake. It was an error. So that's about $30,000. I should have made it 50% because Olmsted County said for $30,000, they can put them up in their town or they can send them off to Moose Lake. And so away they go. There's a disproportionate rate of people being sent there. It's an L. The southern and western part of Minnesota send more than the metro and that chunk. But nonetheless, they're there. They're civilly committed. They've done their crime. Someone thought they weren't ready to go. And who's the responsible party to let them go? And so work on it next year. Well, perhaps. But I think what's there now is not sufficient. And I would rather have the placeholder be something more robust, and you can kind of clean that up compared to the rather, I don't know, gap-filled method that we have now and the lack of accountability. So I don't know if you want to take testimony. I don't mean to belabor it. I think this topic is pretty well known to the committee. I don't know if the House has heard this. I know the Senate's heard it with some thoroughness, and they were very happy to put this on, and Senator Hoffman was gracious to put it on as a really good idea. And so I think that we've worked on this a lot. I think the House is just taking what came out of the pipe. And so I would urge a yes vote on that.
Senator, but we never took anything that came from the plate. We worked on this section. This is a state agency. Unlike any other place, it's a safety net facility for the state, taking care of the most vulnerable individuals. As you have noted, the CEO will be appointed by the executive board. I don't want to misspeak, but I wanted to invite Mr. Stockamp to explain a little bit about that while he's coming to the table. The CEO...
I'm glad it wasn't out of the pipe. Thank you. I stand corrected.
The CEO will be confirmed by the Senate. The executive board will be confirmed by the Senate. We created an advisory council that will provide that will include legislators who will provide advisory to the board. So we're putting layers of check and balances in that process. But this is like any other hospital facility, but a state agency which is a safe thing for the state. Mr. Stockamp, I don't know if you wanted to add any statement to that.
Mr. Chair, senators and representatives, thank you for the opportunity. I'm Dan Stockamp, Director of Operations for Direct Care and Treatment. And Mr. Chair, I think you summarized it very well. I would only add that I know this committee also put in some compromise language that allows the governor to ask for performance review of the CEO at any point, and that they have 14 days to do that evaluation and give a report back to the governor on what their actions were up to and could include dismissal from those positions.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Chair Hoffman.
The point raised is still, that goes down to Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dan. We still have a question mark about the ward. I'm a ward of what, right? I mean, who's going to be the ultimate person right now that's in charge of that individual, right? And I think the confusion lies right now, it is the Department of Human Services Commissioner. I believe that is a correct statement, and that's where the confusion, and the Senate was trying to address this. And I know at the same time, when we were doing our markup, Jim, the House was doing their markup as well. The same issues were coming up. And I do have a commitment from both Senator Rasmussen and Senator Fate to specifically delve in this, because the decision of who is in charge, right now it's the commissioner, and it stays the commissioner, and if I'm wrong, somebody please correct me, until the full transition happens. That full transition, according to law, is 2026. Is that correct, Dan?
Mr.
Chair, Senator Hoffman, the current law says January 1 of 25. Your proposal here, it says July 1 of 25 is when DCT will be its own entity. And by their advisor's instructions, the executive board is who actually is overseeing the commitments as it currently is. And I know that is a discussion we've had both in the House and the Senate. It's a very complicated language with four different types of civil commitments that are out there. And I think we're going to need some time over the summer to see how this all plays out with the revisor's changes, with these changes, and we may be coming back next year to talk about.
So, Mr. Chair, so to that point, let's say this, everything stays right now. Between now and January 1 or July of 1 of 2025, and then happens, is the commissioner who then becomes the overseer of a ward? And I don't like to use the term ward, but that's all I can think of in that. But who's the ultimate person that oversees? Somebody who's been committed to this treatment facility or this hospital.
Mr. Stoke.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, and representatives. Under current law, the commissioner can delegate, and she delegates to the CEO to do many of those responsibilities. In the new world, starting July 1, the executive board is responsible, and they will delegate to the CEO for those responsibilities.
Thank you, Mr. Stockamp. I think, Chair Hoffman, you and I served in school board.
Really?
Well,
I think I served on the Anoka-Hennepin, which was the largest school district in the state of Minnesota.
The reason why I bring that.
And you were on the Minneapolis school board at the time. That's where, yes, I remember.
The superintendent and the school board. I think that's they delegate their authority to the superintendent.
Correct.
I think we're coming to a process where, but we have worked in a system that takes care of our young kids, which is now a school board delegating their authority to the superintendent to run some of those things. So I think I can see the relations in that aspect, and that's why I think they should be the authority for the executive board to implement some of those things.
So to that point, to Senator Abler's point, which is then we've been having this discussion, Jim, since we first did it as markup and even until now. I mean, this is like, okay, what is that? If we get commitment from Senator Fate and Senator Rasmussen, because Senator Fate also raised the same issue, right, and that I'm raising, and I'm not speaking on behalf of you, but he also did that. And if you guys are supposed to be working to figure that out, does the current language moving to July 1 of 2025, does that give us time to have that summer open dialogue conversation where January we have a commitment to make that decision so that by July we will know? And in the process, the commissioner is the one in charge of that individual. Does that sound reasonable to you?
Chair Hoffman, I think some of the processes, their budget will have to be approved by legislature. So that means as part of that conversation, we can bring all this in place. Mr. Stockham, did you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, we'd be happy to work with legislative and legislative staff over the summer on this issue.
Senator Eber.
Well, just a couple things. And so I appreciate that. I think that the two chairs need to get a, you need to add a, if you have two senators, I think you want a one each. I think you want to tap one each from the House. But I think also you want an assurance from the administration, not just our good commissioner here and this, you know, Mr. Storkamp, but from the administration that they will actually change it to a way that accomplishes filling the gap that's there. I think the assurance that the two of you and four others are going to work on it, and he's all in, but he doesn't work for himself. He's a really good example of a good, you know, state leader person. But at the end, this has to be resolved. And so I think that, and I'm just suggesting that, I do have just two other things. One is when you're on the school board, you're kicking a kid out of school, but you're not releasing a sex offender. And so there are some sex offenders who do not belong. They're like that 60-year-old kid who is now 30 that's 10 years past when they should have been done being there. And some of those people should never get out because they are truly dangerous, and they live next to you, and you're going to move because it's just that scary, some of these individuals, and the recidivism, then how do you pick? And so the question that is not answered is, a sex offender gets released. Well, maybe Mr. Storkamp can tell me. So, okay, I've got this person. You know, I'm a sex offender. I want to get out, and I make my case. And in the model that's in the bill here, who decides I get to get out? Mr. Chair, Mr. Storkamp.
Mr. Storkamp. Chair, Senator Abler. The current law actually is the courts ultimately decide who comes in and who
goes out. I mean, under the proposed language.
And under the proposed language, that doesn't change. The only thing that changes here is that instead of the commissioner opposing to any possible release in that process, it would be the CEO or the board in that role as we kind of move forward. So that only moves, but the CEO and the board don't have the authority to release individuals into
court in, court out, right?
Court in, court out.
So the objecting party wouldn't be the commissioner. It would be some version of whoever is having that meeting, and then you take a vote and you decide we don't. Well, that's helpful.
Mr. Soto.
That is correct. Yeah.
But isn't it still court in, court out, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
It's still it's the same issue you got, right, that still sits there, Mr. Chair. You know, it's the...
Well, Mr. Chair, I wanted to create a discussion. The amendment, Senator Rasmussen, I can't even tell you what it does. I kind of know what it does, but I'm not prepared to even debate the nuance of it. But I wanted to raise this attention. I appreciate that the House has gone and put some more teeth into what was originally brought forward. And so I don't need to take a vote on this, Mr. Chair. I'll withdraw that.
Appreciate that. And you've got our commitment that we'll continue in the interim to figure out how things will be transitioning, because we have to follow that transition. As you're aware of, the DCT will be separate from DHS. So this creates a need for us to make sure that we have good, clear communication and know what's happening there.
Yeah.
Thanks for withdrawing. The A78 has been withdrawn.
I just have one oral amendment.
Senator Eblas,
on page 202, and this is something you need to understand, and I didn't know it was even in the bill. I'd like to move to delete lines 202.16 to 18.
202?
This is that housing thing, I think, if I understand it right.
We'll go there. Let me try to.
Is that the right? Is that what that really is?
The 202.1 are you looking at?
No, it's 16.
No.
Is that the right one? Is this that housing thing, that supportive housing business? Or is that in this bill? Somebody said
Mr.
it was.
Mr. Monahan, if you wanted to explain, I haven't seen the 202.
Senator Abler, as I understand it, last year's revisor's bill deleted the housing support rates. This language that you're pointing to repeals that repealer.
Right.
And the language above at line 1 to line 6 revives and reinstates the housing support rates. So the net effect of these two things is to restore the law to what it was in 2023 before the mistake was made in the revisor's bill.
Right. Senator, it was an error that we're correcting in this bill.
Right. There are some people that are concerned about this. They think they're going to come to harm because of this. And I didn't know it was even in this bill. We didn't hear it in our committee. And it's in the education bill, even, I understand, as well, which makes no sense. But maybe Ms. Bailey can help me understand.
Director Bailey.
But these individuals were very concerned, something about the rates are half or something, and I don't understand it, but this is the place to do it. And frankly, Mr. Chair, if whatever amendment I make is successful, it's being debated on the Senate floor after it passed the House, so it may be moot, but I think it's appropriate for people to understand what this does and doesn't do and the effect on people who are doing supportive housing, because there are some thousands of people who apparently think they're at risk. So, Mr. Chair.
Director Bailey.
Mr. Chair, Senator Liebler. So as Senate Counsel mentioned, this is fixing an error in the revisor's bill last year. What occurred is that we have two housing programs that kind of interrelate with one another. One is a state-funded program called Housing Support, and one is a Medicaid program called Housing Stabilization. When we brought on housing stabilization, this line got put into law that basically said that when a person is eligible for housing stabilization, a Medicaid benefit, and they're also receiving housing support, that the housing support rate would be half of what it would be otherwise. And the reason for that was to ensure that there's no duplication among both services. There's rules in the Medicaid program to ensure that there isn't another source also paying for the same service. And so that was the intention of the original law. So fast forward to this year, the revisor accidentally repealed that portion of the law that stated that those rates get cut in half as obsolete. Now, in a revisor's bill, we all know that the purpose of the revisor's bill isn't to do substantive changes. There was no money appropriated accordingly. There were no hearings on it. And so we have the governor's budget brought forward this fix. And so that's essentially what it's doing. It isn't cutting rates. It's just maintaining status quo.
Senator.
So why are people concerned? Is that because they misunderstand it or something? And so,
Senator, I think the assumption is if we don't do repeal, people will be receiving a higher rate process. That's the assumption from folks. But I think this is an error that we're correcting in this bill.
So, Mr. Chair, it would be like found money. Like suddenly the rate doubles, like yay. But you were, so maybe, how long has this program been joined together in effect the way it's working, the way you want to make it go back to?
Mr. Chair, Senator Abel, I believe 2019 maybe is the date, Ms. Right. Grom.
No, it doesn't matter. My point is, so they got a rate in 2019, they got a rate in 2020, and 2021, and 22. And so no one is going to get less money than they got before. You didn't fund the increase, but you didn't accept the decrease either.
Correct.
So
this will maintain status quo.
No, I think it's important to make that clear because I'm not going to call testifiers. I just wanted to understand this better. So, Mr. Chair, I don't have any more amendments. Thank you.
Are you withdrawing the
oral? Oh, yeah. Well, it was a pretty dandy amendment, though, I have to say. I almost had you there. I think we're going to fix this problem.
Senator Eblet withdraws his oral amendment. Seeing no further amendments to the DE, we will vote on the DE amendment as amended with the oral section that we did on the food. This is not the final vote on the bill. All those in favor of adopting the DE amendment as amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails and the amendment as amended is now adapted to the DE. discussion to the DEA amendment as amended? See no further discussion.
Well, ask Mr. Chair. I have a comment, but I'll wait everybody else to say something.
Seeing no further discussion of that, I'll move a motion to adopt the conference report on.
Mr. Chair, I do have a comment. I was just waiting for everybody else to say whatever they want.
Did you want
to? I'll speak to your motion. How's that?
That's what I'm planning to.
Okay.
So I will renew my motion that House file, Senate file, Senate file 5335 as amended. Any discussion to the motion?
Anybody else? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't mean to monopolize the night, but this is a really important, the people that we touch with our bill are really important. And I do see a lot of thought into the bill. I want to commend where I can. All the things you're buying are really nice things. I have no objection to anything that you've bought with the money that we have. I do have some question about the priorities, which I've already explained, and I'm very concerned about the future of some of these programs. We're coming on to hard times, and some of the reductions and the savings you've taken would have been really nice to use next year if we could have found a way to just salt those away. And because sitting through a reduction budget is really hard. And if nothing changes, the two of you will be sitting at this table again next year. Things might change, who knows? But who's ever going to be saddled with the job is going to be very difficult. I don't remember the last time I've not supported a human services bill, Mr. Chair. And that makes me kind of sad. I'm committed to the work. I'm committed to the people we serve, as I know you all are as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on the bill before us as amended?
You want me to do this?
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Hoffman.
I move to direct nonpartisan staff to prepare a conference committee report and incorporation of the spreadsheet. I also move that nonpartisan staff are empowered to make technical and conforming changes to the language that is approved by this conference committee in order to reflect the intent of this conference committee. And so all those in favor, I would say aye. Is that correct? Is that yours?
Thank you, Chair Hoffman. So with that, with no further discussion, I move the approval of Senate file 5335 as amended, conference committee report. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. Remember that is the last motion before us, and I think the Chair Hoffman had already explained the technical corrections if needed. The nonpartisan will incorporate that in the bill and also the revisor to approve the conference committee report. Members, you'll be receiving an email from the revisor to approve the conference report. Please make sure, if you're approving, to respond immediately so we can wrap up this bill. So thank you so much. I want to appreciate all the work that was done by nonpartisan staff, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Health, and everyone else who was involved in this process. So thank you so much. We are now adjourned.